2 is the chapter and verse, and the title is Compassion for All Living Beings. Okay. So, in the Bhagavad Gita 7:27, Krishna says, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by the dualities arisen from desire and hate. So, hatred arises from delusion and bewilderment, according to the Bhagavad Gita. You can see this all the time. This delusion, the main delusion of all living beings in this material world, is the delusion of the identification with their body, thinking that the self is identical with the body and not understanding that the pure spirit soul is there the same in all living entities. Thus, because of identifying only with the external body, we see so much conflict in the world, and even hatred has been discussed here. And sometimes it seems like the thing that should be that would elevate people to the most highest consciousness, religion or spirituality, is often at the very root of this intense hatred, dislike, illusion that we have. It's like we saw, fortunately it's over now, but some years ago, in Northern Ireland, you had Northern Ireland Catholics and Northern Ireland Protestants. And if you didn't talk to them about religion, I doubt if you could tell one from the other. You know, same culture, same people, everything, but a different religion, and so they're killing each other. We see it between Muslims and Hindus. We see it between Arabs and Jewish people. So many things like this. What to speak of other prejudices people have based upon race or based upon any kind of ethnic group identification. So this is very unfortunate. There's these strong feelings of antagonism towards one another that's led to hundreds and hundreds of wars throughout the known history of mankind. Now contrast this consciousness with that of an advanced devotee. So we're going to read, I guess that's not up there, Bhagavad Gita 6:32, verse and purport. I'll just read it through. Oh, okay. I'm just going to read it here. Atmao pamyena sarvatra samam pashati yorjuna sukham ba yadiva dukham sayogi paramamata. He is the perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna. And Srila Prabhupada's purport. One who is Krishna conscious is a perfect yogi. He is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. This next is a very important sentence. The cause of the distress of a living entity is forgetfulness of his relationship with God. And the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna as three things: to be the supreme enjoyer of all the activities of the human being, the proprietor of all the lands and planets, and the sincerest friend of all living entities. Who remembers that verse? What did Prabhupada call that verse? Peace formula, right? Bhoktara, yeah. The peace formula. So he's not quoting the Sanskrit, but he's saying the same concept here, that if we understand those things about who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, then one has true happiness. Okay. The perfect yogi knows that the living being who is conditioned by the modes of material nature is subjected to the threefold material miseries due to forgetfulness of his relationship with Krishna. And because one in Krishna consciousness is happy, he tries to distribute the knowledge of Krishna everywhere. Since the perfect yogi tries to broadcast the importance of becoming Krishna conscious, he is the best philanthropist in the world and the dearest servant of the Lord. The Chatasman Munuyeshu Kaschinme Priyakritama, Bhagavad Gita 1869. That's not translated here, but basically it means no one in this world is more dear to me, Krishna says, and his devotee. In other words, a devotee of the Lord always looks to the welfare of all living entities, and in this way, he is factually the friend of everyone. He is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection in yoga for personal benefit, but tries for others also, other's benefit. He does not envy his fellow living entities. Here is a contrast between the pure devotees of the Lord and a yogi only interested in personal elevation. The yogi who is withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as a devotee who is trying his best to turn every man toward Krishna consciousness. So this is such an important concept of how the devotee sees the spiritual equality in all living beings. And this vision isn't just towards human beings, but extends to animals, plants. Every living entity is actually of the same spiritual substance. And therefore, the devotee desires the welfare of every living entity. And we don't want to cause distress unnecessarily to others. Like, it's one of the reasons we don't eat meat. We don't want to cause pain and anxiety to animals. And so we try to do that to the best of our ability. And as Prabhupada was saying in the purport, the devotee sees the happiness and distress of all the living entities out there is connected with whether, depends upon whether they are connected with God and feeling happiness, or whether they are disconnected or forgetting God and feeling distress. So, that vision comes from a particular spiritual consciousness or understanding that the devotee has. And it's based upon really two realizations. Because there's actually two spiritual beings within our bodies, right? Does that sound odd? Yeah, the two different spiritual beings within our bodies. One, of course, is our us, the spirit soul, who we really are, who is this inhabitant's body. And the second being, spiritual being is Krishna, the super soul, Paramatma, within the heart of every living entity. So, one who has realized, understands that the super soul pervades everything and is in everyone's heart, and that that spirit soul, that life force within every body, each body, is of the same quality of all the other living entities. In the same quality, but obviously not identical. So first let's look at that idea of the super soul pervading everything. Krishna accompanies us through this birth and every life form. I always find this amazing, and Prabhupada so often spoke of this, of the great compassion of Krishna. Krishna's great compassion that he takes it upon himself to spread himself, just like through many, many reflections of himself, but all equally powerful. So many super souls, so many Krishnas, and they come along with each one of us in every body, through our sojourn, through this material world. And that is really quite amazing. The example is often is given in, I think, Svetashvatar Upanishad, of the two birds in the tree. Yeah, there's this, two birds in a tree, the green leaves, there's the parrot, and one parrot is eating the fruit, is trying to enjoy, and the other is turning to, and the other is Krishna. And finally, the living entity, when he becomes totally disgusted, becomes just exhausted by this material world, may, if he's fortunate, turn to Krishna, who is the super soul within the tree or the body there. So Paramatma is one, but he expands and reflects into every being. Chaitanya Charitamrita Ancha 20:25 says, although a Vaishnava is most exalted person, he is prideless and gives all respect to everyone, knowing everyone to be the resting place of Krishna. So that's the first principle. When we look at each other and we look at every living, all living entities, first of all, we know Krishna's there. Every single person, every being is a receptacle for the Lord. Krishna, God, is there within us. So that's one reason why, you know, we feel such importance that we put to really appreciating every living entity, because Krishna's there. So if each person and living entity has the soul and the super soul within, why would we want to harm anyone, you know, recognizing that spiritual existence? Another purport by Srila Prabhupada 5:18. Excuse me. A Krishna conscious person does not make any distinction between species or castes. The Brahmin and the outcast may be different from the social point of view, or a dog, a cow, or an elephant may be different from the point of view of species, but these differences of body are meaningless from the viewpoint of the learned transcendentalists. This is due to the relationship to the Supreme, for the Supreme Lord, by his plenary portion as Paramatma, is present in everyone's heart. So, if Krishna expands himself as a plenary portion, the super soul within everyone's heart, I finally learned after about 45 years as a devotee, I decided to look it up finally. Do people know what plenary means? We talk about a plenary portion of Krishna?
Full.
Very good. It means has it completely empowered. Sometimes they use it like a diplomat has plenary powers or something like that, which means he completely can represent his country. Like he's representing the king or the president, even though he's not. It's a little bit different because it's not different. But when we say a plenary portion, it means it has all of the powers of the original. So what's the difference? What's the difference between Krishna, the original Swayam Bhagavan in Vrindavan, and Purusha incarnations, Purusha avatars like the Super Soul? The difference really is in how many qualities they manifest. Equal power, but obviously different qualities are there within Krishna, and in some manifestations he manifests more. And the manifestation of Krishna in Vrindavan, all qualities are manifested. There's the 64 qualities, and of course he possesses every single one of those in the superlative. So at any rate, pretty much this, in other words, the super soul is within us, is God. It's all the power of God and can give us all the knowledge of God. Not that we have all that knowledge necessarily. It all depends upon what he chooses to impart to us. Okay? So the second point is our spirit soul self, the Atma, or the Jiva, that's within every one of us. When we say inside every one of us, how you say inside every body, because it's not that we have a spirit soul. It's important to understand we are the spirit soul. The soul is who we are. The soul inhabits bodies, takes on different identities, but who we are is the soul eternally. Krishna says right at the very beginning of his instructions to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall they ever cease to be. So that eternal soul is there. Okay, it's covered over now by these particular body and mind, gross and subtle coverings that are there, but it is there. So there's a commonality of each soul. Each soul is unique. It's not that all the souls merge together in some sort of conglomerate mass or something like that. It's not an impersonal understanding. We are persons. God is a person. We are persons. Every single one of you is an individual person. But somehow or another, this is one of those things we call a chintabheda tattva, inconceivably simultaneously one and different. We are all different, but we are all the same. We are all of the same nature. Just as we see material substance, we're made out of what? Earth, air, water, fire, ether, mind, intelligence, ego. Five gross elements, three subtle elements, all interacting in many, many different ways according to interactions of the modes of material nature. So, pretty elaborate substance arrangements there. So there's also substance in the spiritual world, but spiritual substance. And that spiritual substance, the sort of building blocks of, say, the spiritual world in Vrindavan and all that, it's Chintamani. That's kind of the spiritual substance. We have the spiritual qualities of Sat, Chit, Ananda. We are eternal. These are three different energies, three of God's energies that we are composed of as well as Krishna. We are eternal, Sat. We are full of knowledge, Chit. And Ananda, happiness, completely filled with happiness. Why don't we feel happiness? Because we are not identifying completely with our purified spiritual body, and we're in these material bodies that are causing us still distress and unhappiness. But that's what we have to understand. We have this nature of God, although God is very great and we are very small. We hear the examples that Prabhupada and the Acharyas give us all the time about, you know, you can take an ocean and you can take a handful of water out of that ocean, and if you analyze the qualities of that, you know, water in your hand, it's the same qualities and same chemicals that's in the ocean. But could you say, I have the ocean in my hand? Of course not. One is very great and one is very small. So that's the nature of things. So there is this commonality, though, of each soul, although we have different qualities. So we want to see this way. This is the vision. This is spiritual, transcendental vision that we want to develop. Canto 11, chapter 19, Krishna describes the qualities to advance in human life. Satyam cha samadarshanam. Truth is seeing all beings as oneself in happiness and distress. And that's very similar to the verse that we are reading today, 632, that the yogi sees the happiness and distress of others. Now, that's interesting because it's an important aspect of this idea of equal vision, of seeing the commonality of experience. So we understand another's suffering and we feel some empathy or compassion, you know, for that suffering. Now, it's kind of interesting when you think about it, because we say, okay, we're not our bodies, we're the soul, all the suffering we experience is just due to the body and identification with the body. In the pure, in the spiritual world, there is no suffering and happiness. So why should we have compassion for people's suffering? I mean, it's kind of an interesting philosophical point, but of course we do. In other words, the devotee is filled with compassion because we see how much people are suffering in this material world, and we want people to be relieved of that suffering. Why else would devotees, and not just devotees too, but people of all religions going out preaching, trying to convert people, trying to get, you know, why would God descend in so many avatars? Why would God send so many great devotees, saints, sages, everyone to, you know, kind of preach his message? Out of compassion. This is the great compassion that comes from the Lord himself. But because Krishna does not directly experience that pain, because he has an all-spiritual body and really can't, generally, the human-like, his human-like parts and parcels, the living entities, us, become the ones who disseminate that message, who preach to others, who talk to others, because it's saying here, you can have that common experience of people, and we can understand. We've all experienced suffering. We know what it's like for people to suffer. Really interesting verse. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 10th chapter, verse 14. This one says, by seeing their faces, one whose body has been pricked by pins can understand the pain of others who are pinpricked. Realizing that this pain is the same for everyone, he does not want others to suffer in this way. But one who has never been pricked by pins cannot understand this pain. That's saying that there needs to be some common shared understanding or experience. Srila Prabhupada's purport says, there's a saying, the happiness of wealth is enjoyable by a person who has tasted the distress of poverty. There's also another common saying, Vanjaki Bhubaje Prasava Vedana. All you ladies understand that one? Okay. It means, a woman who has not given birth to a child cannot understand the pain of childbirth. Yes, my wife has told me that repeatedly. Can't understand it. Okay. It's true. So these three examples were about being pricked by a pin or poverty to wealth or childbirth are examples of how if one has a certain experience, then one becomes sympathetic. Even this idea of coming from poverty, there's been some great philanthropists like Andrew Carnegie who became, I think he was the second richest person in the world. I don't think he ever beat Rockefeller. But anyway, he had hundreds of millions of dollars back in the 1890s or whatever, and he gave away 90% of it. And he built about 3,000 libraries around the United States and did so many things. And he felt that was very important because, and he actually came from a very humble background, and so he could understand. And he understood how important education was for him. Therefore, he put libraries in all these little, where I grew up in this little small town in Illinois. There was the Carnegie Library that he had built in DeKalb, Illinois. So, these are just illustrations. He's not a spiritual personality, but it just illustrates this idea that if one has a certain experience in life, then one can have concern and compassion for others. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura is also an interesting purport on this verse. He says, by seeing their faces implies understanding a commonality of experience, and word lingar implies seeing the symptoms in their bodies. So he says, by seeing the symptoms, one in pain, such as withering a face or having experienced oneself, one understands the nature of pain and thereby sympathizes with someone experiencing pain. So this is a little bit of psychology here from the Srimad Bhagavatam about how we perceive our experience and how we perceive others' experiences. And we can understand their experiences, not that we experience them directly, but we can see somewhat like what they're like. You know, like sometimes when someone is really in distress or really grieving, and you say, I know how you feel, it's not usually appreciated. It really isn't, because you don't know, you really don't know how they feel, and they don't think you know how, but you may have had a similar experience, right? I mean, in other words, you know, you may have some idea how they might be feeling. You just have to be, well, that's a whole other class about how to deal with grieving people. But anyway, the idea is that by our own experience, you know, we can understand something of others. Okay. And then Vishnu says in 11.9.37, truth means seen equally everywhere. One should see others' suffering as one's own, giving up harsh qualities like envy and hatred. So in other words, when we see someone suffering, it could very easily be us or people we cared about. So why do we artificially make a distinction, this person I care about, this person's suffering I don't care about? Well, part of it's because I think, I'll answer myself, because we only have so much capacity, probably. If I actually take on the sufferings of everyone in the universe, I'd have to be Vasudev Dutta, right? The great, great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who actually wanted to do that. And I think he was the incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj, or not incarnation, is that true? I mean, not incarnation, but he was Prahlad descending. So this is like the highest level of compassion that we see in the greatest devotees. Vasudev Dutta said, told Lord Chaitanya, I don't want to go back to Godhead. I don't want to be relieved from the suffering here until every living entity is free from suffering. And I will, not only that, I will take that suffering, that karma, upon myself. And this isn't just some boast or something. This is his genuine feeling. This is from his heart. And Lord Chaitanya said to him, of course you feel that way because you are Prahlad Maharaj. And he said, but you don't need to. It's not necessary. Why? Because Lord Chaitanya said, I have already delivered everyone in this universe. So we're already delivered. But how many lifetimes do you want it to be before we're delivered? In other words, it'll happen because Lord Chaitanya has decreed that it will happen. And Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. But it's up to us how fast, how slow that journey is, the direction, how many bends and crooks and, you know, forward and backward motions there are in that spiritual journey to self-realization. You know. But it is happening. Okay. Understanding the suffering of others is the basis of Vaishnava compassion. One word we often use in English is empathy. And one definition of empathy is the identification with or vicarious experiencing of the feelings, thoughts, or attitudes of another. So it's, identification with understanding. Doesn't mean that you necessarily have to feel just like a person feels. You don't have to necessarily even agree with how they feel. but it means you do understand it, and that's empathy. But compassion is deeper. Compassion goes beyond, because compassion also includes the desire to alleviate the suffering of others. So not just I understand their suffering, I can get that, but what can I do to help them? So a Vaishnava is described as paradukaduki, because though he is never distressed in any condition of life, he is distressed to see others in a distressed condition. That's Prabhupada's purport 4.647. He says, a Vaishnava is described as paradukaduki because although he is never distressed, he is distressed to see others in distressed condition. Vaishnavas, therefore, should not try to kill by any action of body or mind, but should try to revive the Krishna consciousness of others out of compassion for them. I also wanted to mention a very interesting section of the Bhaktisandarbha by Jiva Goswami. And this is a very long section he has, Anucheda 106, where he discusses the importance of equal vision, the topic we have today. And he's a nice sentence here, that where he put, he said, seeing with eyes of non-difference everywhere is the best vision. In other words, we can see in many different ways, and we can see simultaneously in different ways, right? We all, somebody said, well, I can see it from this perspective, I can see it from that perspective. So we see all that, but the best is to see non-difference. In other words, the soul within each living entity. And then Jiva Goswami quotes Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 329. Several verses here from Lord Kapila Dev's teachings to his mother Devahuti. And if you're following along our Srimad Bhagavatam class, we'll get there eventually. It's been a very, very long story of Kardamuni and Devahuti and all of them. It's just fascinating, really. It's like an adventure story, sometimes Srimad Bhagavatam. But in a couple chapters, we're going to get to where Kapiladev, does his actual teaching, and some really just incredible, wonderful parts in that we'll be coming to. Anyway, I'm going to read a few of these verses. This is from chapter 29, third canto, Bhagavatam, starting with 23. One who offers me respect but is envious of the body of others and therefore a separatist never attains peace of mind because of his inimical behavior towards other living entities. In other words, someone may be very devoted to the deity, but if he treats everyone else badly, Krishna doesn't like that. He's not very pleased, okay? And then he says, my dear mother, this is Kapila Dev talking to Devahuti. My dear mother, even if he worships with proper rituals and paraphernalia, a person who is ignorant of my presence in all living entities never pleases me by the worship of the deity in the temple. That doesn't mean he's not pleased by deity worship. It means that if you worship the deity in the temple, you have to also recognize Krishna, the super soul, in his part and parcel living entities. Performing his prescribed duty, one should worship the deity until one realizes my presence in his own heart, in the heart of other living entities. As the blazing fire of death, I cause great fear to whoever makes the least discrimination between himself and other living entities because of a differential outlook. That was a heavy one. Therefore, through charitable gifts and intention, as well as friendly behavior, and by viewing all to be alike, one should propitiate me who abide in all creatures as their very self. Now, skipping ahead a little bit, he finally concludes, says, such a perfect devotee offers respect to every living entity because he's under the firm conviction that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has entered the body of every living entity as the super soul or the controller. So, now here's, I guess we could say, a nuance or a subtlety to this about seeing everyone as equal. If we see all living entities as equal because they have the common spirit soul, do we treat all living entities equally? We might say yes, but Prabhupada gave us an example where that might not be the case. For instance, he says that the human and the tiger have the same spirit soul, but we don't make friends with tigers. So, in other words, there are some exceptions. And there's a gradation. Distinctions are made. And then that same part of 329 has this whole fascinating section about the gradation of living entities based upon the development of the senses and consciousness all the way from simple life forms all the way up to Brahmins and to the highest. And talking about the development of senses in the living entities, like, trees have two senses. They have a sense of sight and a sense of smell, where something like a dog has all five senses, you get up to a mammal. I always thought that was fascinating, the thing that trees have a sense of sight. They do. They really do. In fact, I do a lot of gardening, so I've noted some examples of this. I don't know, it's not really a tree, but plants. Okay, so I've given this example before, but I think it's fascinating. Okay, I'm growing pole beans, right? Y'all with me? The beans that grow up. Okay, and I got this trellis thing from the grow on, but it's a little bit far away. It's about a foot away from where they're planted. It's just the way it worked out. So they grow up, and they don't touch it, and that's nothing to do with the direction of the sun or anything like that, and they just start coming over to it till finally they go over to it, and then they climb up it. I can only conclude, yes, they have the power of sight. They can see. And I've seen a lot of other examples like that with plants, and trees. It's really fascinating when you see, if you really observe nature, you often see so many of these lessons that are in the Bhagavatam at work. Right, Pushpa? Pushpa and I were just talking about, I don't know, but we don't give him enough accolades for these wonderful flowers that he grows that go to the deities. Thank you. Okay. So anyway, humans, though, are unique, right? Why are humans unique amongst all the life forms? Because they have the cognitive development, the intellectual ability to understand higher spiritual knowledge and to love and to serve God again. But there's a great deal of variety within human beings with the development of consciousness. And Lord Kapila finally concludes that the best person is the devotee who offers respect to all living beings. So while we see the same soul, distinctions may be made in relationships. As I said, we don't. Prabhupada said, though, that while we don't make friends with a tiger, we should give them prasadam. So in other words, we want to show compassion to all living entities, even if we don't have a relationship. Sometimes, Prabhupada said once, actually, that there's no real love between different species. People think that their animal, their pet, really loves them. Well, they like them, I guess. There's something there. There is some real affection, I admit. But I think a lot of it's based upon the person that feeds them. is their best friend, right? Okay. And then Jiva Goswami concludes, highest respect should be given to those devotees of the Lord, but respect should be given to all others as much as possible. Another part of the Bhaktisiddhanta, Jiva Goswami was talking about criticism. And he said how we should never criticize other devotees. And we should really never criticize. And finally, he said that actually we should try not to ever criticize anything. It's just, it never leads to good. It's always just negative. It gets us in the, that critical mood of things. I mean, it's not that we don't have intelligence and critical thinking. It's not that we don't make distinctions and we want to have good association and use our intelligence and so many things, but there's just so little point in all of the criticism that we see today and you go on the internet and it's just horrible and, and even within devotees, the devotees seem to have become harsher over the years since I remember. But, maybe that's just the old, how we romanticized the good old days and they weren't always so good, But at any rate, I think it's just something we have to be very careful about, we're supposed to have compassion to every living entity, to every, dog, tree, and microbe out there, what to speak of our fellow worshipers and devotees of God. So, just something to always keep in mind. So we want to develop compassion. And I'm out of time, so I will end by saying, meaning the main message I think today was that true compassion or spiritual compassion is not a separate quality from developing love of Krishna. It's not that I develop my love of God and maybe someday I'll think about compassion to living entities. They're not two different things. They're very much together. One, naturally, who develops their love of God will love their fellow human beings, dogs, cats, and everything else. And compassion for others flows from one's love for Krishna. Seeing Krishna's love for all living beings and seeing them as part and parcel of Krishna. That's the spiritual vision, samadarshana, the equal vision of a devotee. And of not making material distinctions and seeing it's one thing is described that what is it the nature of the love that jivas have for each other? In other words, it's based upon Krishna, really. Well, first of all, we wouldn't exist without Krishna, naturally. We're all part and parcel of Krishna. Everything is Krishna, one and different. But when we see that another living entity, another devotee, is loved by Krishna, and that devotee loves Krishna, we naturally love that devotee. Absolutely natural process, and our acharyas have described that. Okay, so one thing that helps to develop compassion, of course, it's dependent upon spiritual advancement, just as we were talking about. It's dependent upon developing a spiritual vision. And the heart does become soft as our love for Krishna develops. So we develop that sense of compassion for all living entities. But also, it helps to practice. Sadhana is, at essence, sadhana is practice, right? We're practicing pure devotional service. It's pure devotional service, what we're doing. But we're doing it in practice, for the most part, sadhana, until we become completely realized in that practice, and it becomes more spontaneous, more directly just from our heart. You know, so as we attempt to develop good qualities, to see each other in the best light, and as we try to engage the living entities in Krishna consciousness through preaching, through our outreach, all of these ways, this helps us develop compassion. Right? In other words, it's often said that one of the best ways, if somebody is very self-absorbed, what's the best remedy for that? Do something for someone else, right? Or, I mean, if one is very concerned with their own problems, you know, help somebody else in need, and it does so much for us, you know. So when we try to develop this, then actually that advancement is there, and Krishna sees that, and Krishna gives us all help to become more advanced in Krishna consciousness and to develop transcendental vision. Okay, thank you all so much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Did you have one, bro? Who has the microphone up here?
Thank you, Prabhu. Very beautiful class. I really enjoyed. I have several questions, but just want to ask at least one. Can you hear me?
No, not very well.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. I was saying thank you for a very nice class. Thank you. I have so many questions, but I just want to ask at least one. Regarding Chintamani, you said. So Chintamani, if we compare from the material world, let's say, you know, origin of all the material tattvas, let's say pradhan or mahatattva, is Chintamani is the same where all Satchit Anand is all in one, where all originate, and what exactly Chintamani is?
Satchit Ananda is, I'm not sure if I quite got it.
I was asking, what is Chintamani?
What is Chintamani? Okay. Yeah, Chintamani is spiritual energy. It's an expansion of Balaram, by the way. And is it Satchidananda? Probably. I'm a little bit out of my depths, but I would say yes. If you take you know, such, if you have the energies of Satchitananda, you know, you would have Chintamani there. Yeah.
So Krishna,
Prangavinda agrees. So.
So Krishna is Chintamani, or is made of Chintamani, or
Krishna? No, Krishna is beyond everything. Everything is coming from Krishna. Krishna, yes, he is, and he's more. Whatever you say he is, yes, he is. You're right, but he's more. He's always more. He's the original. He's the foundation. You know, all energies come from Krishna. Yes, I mean, when you think about it, because Satchitananda, that's not all the energies. There's also the material energy. There's three energies, right? There's Jiva Shakti, you know. There's the Prakriti, and then the spiritual energy. You know, of course, the Jiva is also spiritual energy. But yeah. All energy is coming from Krishna. Yeah. Someone else? Yeah, why don't we go over here to the ladies' side first? All right.
Thank you, Tamahar Prabhu. It's a great class. I had a question, just because it's something that seems to be coming up for me a lot lately. It's seeing God in everybody, seeing Krishna in everybody, and I feel like every time I hear that or, you know, read a purport or something, I feel surcharged. I'm like, okay. And then I get into traffic, right? I get cut off. And I'm instantly bewildered. So I'm wondering, from your experience and your time practicing bhakti yoga, any tips or tricks for the neophyte to kind of keep that equal vision as I'm driving, as I'm in the classroom, as I'm hanging out with family, et cetera?
Well, getting old helps. you know, you can energy level degree. No, the problem, yeah, and what you're saying is like kind of a bigger issue, a bigger problem we all have, which is we know the philosophy, but can we always apply it? Can we always live it? Right? That's kind of what you're saying. Then it's like it's kind of out the window sometimes when you're in the traffic and you're yelling at the person who cut you off or whatever. My experience, the best thing I can say is chant. Chant the Hare Krishna mantra as much as you can, wherever you can, repeatedly. That keeps us connected with Krishna, keeps us connected with the spiritual energy. Of course, any hearing, chanting, like in your car, you could be playing kirtans or playing, you know, tapes or whatever, lectures of Prabhupada. No, it's just the more we keep ourselves sort of in that atmosphere of hearing and chanting. And that's not always easy to do. I understand. People are at work and, you know, all sorts of different things. But the more we can, the more we tend to be able to overcome the material conditioning. And some of it, frankly, just takes time. When I said getting old, I wasn't entirely being facetious, because it does take some time. You know, it takes some time, because what Prabhupada said once in the beginning, he said, clean our hearts, he said, it's like scrubbing coal. You know, the black keeps coming up. It's kind of how we are. So we're pretty conditioned. It does take a while, but I think anyone who's stuck it out for a number of years will tell you it does work. It does work. You eventually, you know. Well, Prabhupada said you can judge your advancement by how much you're attached to Krishna and how much you are unattached, or how much, you know, from the material world, from the material energy. And so we can kind of use that as a rough barometer and sort of see how we're doing. And I think we all see we have kind of both, you know, on some weighted level. So one thing I think is not to, it's maybe realistic not to try to be a pure devotee tomorrow, but try to get the balance more and more towards the spiritual and less towards the material, right? Just figure out how can we keep increasing that. And it'll get us there. It will get us there. Oh, go ahead.
Hare Krishna, brother. Thank you for the amazing class. The point you mentioned about compassion, like you were saying that when the example you gave about Srila Prabhupada saying that when we are pricked by pins, we can feel the pain of the others. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's such a wonderful quality of a Vaishnava, like you brought out today. I was just thinking about, like, the other end of the spectrum where, like, what do we do if we see somebody who is so into other people's pain that they forget their own role or their own, you know, like taking kind of their own life and their story, and they kind of are so busy doing something for others and kind of living, almost living for somebody else. And I was thinking of the words in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, it's better you do your own duty imperfectly mm-hmm. than doing someone else's perfectly.
Right. Yeah.
So how do we find that balance as devotees?
Some of it's common sense, right? Some of it's just, you know, like you just said, you can tell if you're going overboard where you're not taking care of yourself, that's not good, because eventually you're not going to be able to take care of anyone else, right? Because you're not taking care of yourself, and you'll eventually break down like that. So there always needs to be a balance. I was never a very good example of it, taking care of myself. And when people used to talk about that, you say, what does that mean? You know, but, you know, because we just sort of went, and, you know, full speed all the time, it seemed like. In the early days, we were basically sleep deprived continually, and, you know, but and we learned that's maybe not so good. You know, it is probably a little better to pace oneself, you know, take care of oneself, and still at the same time try to develop one's compassion and help others to their greatest ability. You know, I mean, some of these things, if we're just not sure, you know, talk to other people. Talk to devotees you respect, you know, through how you're doing, get some, you know, feedback. You'll figure it out. I think we had,
Hare Krishna, okay. Her question began like the one I was thinking of. The person that's pricked by pins does not want to see others suffer. And we see also in the world, it seems some people just can't wait to inflict pain upon others. And how does that happen? And how do we see that person as a soul, part of Krishna, with equal vision? How are we supposed to respond to that sort of person?
Well, everything is there. And we do have to sort of balance, you know, some of these things, understand them simultaneously. Remember the first verse I read, kind of in the prelude, all living entities are born delusion, bewildered by the dualities of desire and hate. So that's there, yeah. And sometimes it is remarkable, you know, how we can see such, you know, egregious, you know, examples of that. But yeah, that is part of the vision of seeing that this is a very, very covered living entity, you know, who is really a part and parcel of God, you know. And, you know, they're basically, they don't know it, but they're a coward boy or they're, whatever, you know. You know, and that's a difficult vision. That's the vision of the Uttamadhikari, really, to see the pure spirit soul in every living entity. So we may not be able to do that. So we're advised to, you know, to look at living entities in four different categories, right? In other words, you know, especially at the Majjhima or the middle category, which we should all be trying to be at that level, the Majjhimadhikari, which means that we worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we serve those advanced devotees like the spiritual master, we make friendships, you know, with other devotees. Those that are lower than us, we show compassion to and try to help. We don't put them down. We don't say, oh, I'm better than you. We, but through compassion, we try to help them. And then on the other hand, we also see of the non-devotees, those that are innocent, which Prabhupada said 95% of the population is innocent. And some are actually demoniac. There are, unfortunately, those people, it's a harsh term, but we don't like to really use it a lot, but Prabhupada used it. I mean, it is a fact. There are those who are so, totally 100% self-absorbed against God and just exploit other living entities for their own advantage. They are there. And basically, we should avoid those people. That's the scriptural admonition. We avoid those people. We take compassion, preach to the innocent, you know, or to those that are beginners or, you know, newer than us, etc. So, you know, we use discrimination in that way. honestly speaking, this complete seeing all living entities equally is the Uttamadhikari vision. It is the highest vision. And so while we should see that in one sense, or at least be very aware of it, right? I mean, in other words, it's kind of there in our background. But practically speaking, we act on the Mudjam level, which is where we make some distinction, where we don't make friends with a tiger, we make friends with the devotees, right? Okay, is that, I don't know if that helps. All right, yes, over here.
Can I go?
Oh, go ahead, yeah, go ahead.
I just, this kind of goes along with what you've been discussing, compassion, and but I'm gonna put it in a different environment, if you will. You know, on book distribution, you try to be so compassionate. Kill yourself for these people. You try to give them a book. You try to get them to read a line with you. You try to get them to look at a picture. Isn't that a pretty picture? You're killing yourself. You know, you're trying so hard to get them to be interested, to take the next step, to come to the temple, to ask you what you're from, to look at the vegetarian recipes. And I'm telling you, right now, things have changed in the parking lots, at least to me. People are really suffering. Hmm. You know, so many people are going without food. You know, I tell people about the food program at UF. But I guess getting down to my question would be, after you do all that, while you're trying your best, what else could you do to be compassionate if they're not? What else could you do at that time?
Well, in the purport, that's what Prabhupada was really emphasizing, wasn't it? He was emphasizing, you know, the devotees in that mood of going out, you know, to help the conditioned souls, to preach to them, to give books and like that. I mean, that is, there's a point when we can do what we can do. When you say, what more can you do? It sounds like you're doing what you can do, or at least you're doing a lot of it. Remember that the free will, the choice is always there on the part of the living entity. So we may present Krishna consciousness in the nicest possible way, which we think is in a very attractive way, and people still may reject it because they have that choice that's within the heart, and they may not be ready at this point in their spiritual evolution to accept it. But you still have given them benefit, because if they've heard Hare Krishna, they've touched a book, right, all those things you said are under the category of the Gyata Sukriti, unseen, unknown benefit. So they're getting like spiritual bank account points or something, you know. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explained that when that spiritual bank account of Agyata Sukriti reaches a certain level, an accumulation, then that is when Shraddha will happen, faith. That is when the living entity will develop enough faith that he'll, for that, and that one will come to you when you go to them, they'll say, oh, that's really interesting. I want to read this book. I want to come to your temple. In other words, they may have gotten, you know, many more times over different lifetimes some introduction to Krishna consciousness or chanting or whatever, and now it's fructifying, right? So you don't know where you are in the process whenever you're approaching, you know, another conditioned soul. Okay. Anyway, then thank you so much for doing that. Anything else? Oh, so we had over here.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the wonderful class. My question is, sometimes we might see a soul giving compassion to another living entity in one way and someone else in a different way. Mm-hmm. So my question is, are there different levels of compassion?
I was saying, yeah, there's probably compassion in different modes of nature, although that's not a section in the Bhagavad Gita. I've never seen that. But, just like I was saying, you know, sometimes people experience empathy, and compassion, I says, it is a little bit higher level than this empathy. In other words, yeah, there may be different levels of that. And ultimately, the highest compassion is to give someone that will give them the most spiritual benefit, right? I mean, that's ultimately going to be eternal benefit. You know, so if we can do that, I guess that would be a higher compassion than just giving, you know, giving someone who's begging a dollar. Yeah, I mean, you can do that. It's not, you know, and that's the thing. It isn't bad. It's not like we don't, like we're just totally hard-hearted. In fact, you remember, you all know that story. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj is told that his disciples were just his householder, well-to-do, householders who had jobs and everything, going by these beggars, and they just kind of turn away from them. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj says you should give them something. And he said, well, you know, it's not devotional service. Don't we only engage people in devotional service? And he said, if you do not help others, your heart will become hard. And if your heart becomes hard, how can it be open to love Krishna? All right. So we're not indifferent even to the, say, physical, material, bodily pains of others. We're not indifferent to that. And we do want to help. In fact, I always think that's some of those wonderful things about, I love the whole, everything about prasadam distribution, you know, because, you know, we're giving something really wonderful and it's getting spiritual benefit. And sometimes it's even, you know, people really need it, actually need the food. Like, you know, and Srila Prabhupada said in Mayapur, you all remember that story, I'm sure, when he looked down and saw, what was it, two children fighting over in the garbage with the dogs to get a scrap of food? And Prabhupada was almost in tears. And he said, no one should be hungry within 7 miles? 10 miles. 10 miles of our temple. You know, so in other words, yes, there's genuine compassion. There's care about the sufferings of others in all ways. But prasadam is a great way to do both.
Thank you.
Okay, we should probably end class. Thank you all so much for your attention. Hare Krishna.